in rural areas, this would be devastating because, you know, it would close our rural hospitals. Have you seen that in Texas? Has that been the case in Texas?
No. And they're making the same argument, by the way, Jeff, right, on the SITE Act, that, oh my gosh, if we have to, we need to charge more in rural America than we do in urban America because the cost of giving care is just more expensive. Like, that's not true. And no, it's not causing rural America to have, you know, to lose out on these facilities. If anything, driving more innovation like direct primary care or telehealth services, or having more price accountability and transparency is going to cause more clinics, more outpatient areas to start up because there's going to be a lower barrier to entry. And that's what we're seeing in Texas.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thanks for being with us for another episode of American Potential. If you listen to the podcast on your podcast platform, we appreciate that and welcome that. But if you'd like to watch the video version of the podcast, you can do that on our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, type in American Potential, and you'll pull up our channel. You can subscribe to that channel and get all of these podcasts in video format. And so would love to have you do that if you prefer the video format. Listen, as the increasing costs of everyday items continues to shrink family budgets, some households are forced to make challenging decisions regarding other expenses. Now, medical care is certainly one of those expenses. We've all seen rising medical costs, which continue to pinch working families. And today's guest is going to shed some light on why these costs for identical medical services are going up across America, and specifically in the state of Texas. Now, on top of the rising costs, residents in rural Texas also must deal with the inconvenience of having to travel an hour to an hour and a half away from their home just for medical care. So is there anything that could be done to help with these issues that Americans and Texans are facing? Well, there's two bills in Congress that would not only help, but also save taxpayer money. I want to welcome Genevieve Collins, who is the Texas State Director for Americans for Prosperity, onto the show. She's going to talk about what is happening in Texas and how these bills could help. Genevieve, thanks for being with us.
Jeff, it's great to see you. Thanks for having me. Talk about this important issue.
Well, we've had you on before. Every time we first give you the chance to talk about why Texas is the best state in America. So I always have to give that to my friends from Texas. So go ahead.
Well, every Texan loves talking about Texas because we believe we are the greatest state in the nation with no state income tax, low regulatory environment, low cost of living, and an optimistic sense of life here in the state. So if anyone listening thinking about moving, y'all just come on. We'll be happy to have you. It's a great place to live and a great place to raise a family.
Well, and they would have to learn to say y'all, but I will say Texas is growing. I mean, it really is growing because of the pro-growth policies that your legislature has passed, your governor signed into law, and a lot of the work that has been done as well by Americans for Prosperity in Texas.
Yeah, this is a great place. I mean, Texas is a great place to start a business. We have reduced the franchise tax here at Americans for Prosperity. We're very pro-business. We're very pro-small business. You know, we don't believe that the government should be picking winners and losers when it comes to business. We have a regulatory environment that is open to innovation. And whether you're looking at multiple industry verticals, whether that's energy, liquefied natural gas, oil and gas, fracking, or the space industry, you've got NASA, Johnson Space Center, SpaceX, Blue Origin. You've got more jobs in outside of New York City. Dallas, Texas has the most financial services jobs in the country. 32,000 jobs for the financial services industry has moved to Dallas since 2019. And we've got a healthcare system that is focused on increasing access to patients, and we're just making sure that they're also helping reduce the cost of care for patients across the state. So there's a, I like to think that Texas is just not just the Lone Star State, it is the innovation state, a place that really welcomes folks, but also really tries to create a high quality life and a low burden of the government interfering with your life.
Yeah, well, Texas is open for business, no doubt about it. Let's talk about healthcare a little bit. Healthcare costs are going up, and I think it continues to pinch Americans. They more and more feel like healthcare is, it's always something that in polls shows people are uneasy about their healthcare coverage that they have. But why are healthcare costs going up?
Well, it's not just healthcare, Jeff. Costs of everything are going up. Here in Texas, what we're seeing is that there's a consolidation happening in the marketplace, with hospitals consolidating small practices and consolidating rural community hospital outpatient centers. And we're seeing this kind of mass consolidation really ramping down the market for innovation, but also really skyrocketing the prices of care, whether it's similar surgeries, similar practices. We're seeing that the costs are just never ending. And I will say, Texas has done some really great work around price transparency and making sure that hospitals are giving patients the cost of, or the estimated cost of their pricing before a patient receives any services. And so it's one thing to have the price be transparent. It's another to have the cost be consistent and to be lower. And that's what we're working on here at Americans for Prosperity.
Well, and that transparency, and you talked about that's not the end game, but transparency will bring lower, you know, it should help bring lower costs because it helps drive competition. But that's always been a struggle in healthcare because of the way our system is currently configured, that it's not a very transparent system. Talk about maybe some of the things you've done in Texas and elsewhere, maybe at the national level even, to help get more transparency and why that's important in healthcare.
Well, how can one industry be so opaque? That's the governing principle that we are kind of starting from. You know, you can go to a restaurant, you get a menu, you see the prices, you know what you have to pay. Go to a clothing store, you know the price of a pair of jeans, right? Only in the healthcare industry do you get the costs after you receive the service. So it seems backwards here on how patients are supposed to be informed, and more importantly, how patients are supposed to be able to negotiate on the care that they get. So patients are really not in the driver's seat. And that's what we've been working on, is to change the infrastructure where patients are now shoppers, where patients are the ones that are dynamic and actually informed. And so here in Texas, we passed a bill, Senate Bill 490, where not only are hospitals required to give patients 24 hours or before a full estimate of their services that they would receive, but if the hospital does not provide a estimate or a bill to the patient before those services are given, then the hospital cannot take any patient to debt collection. So there, we want to change the incentive structure here. And what we've recognized is that 6 out of 10 Texans are in some form of medical debt. This is unacceptable. People just want to be healthy and want to have access to care at a cost they can afford and not be saddled with thousands of dollars of debt. Something I have personally gone through, I got a surprise $33,000 bill from a hospital here in Dallas, Texas, after having an emergency surgery and going into septic shock. I went into more shock being, when I got home and got a $33,000 surprise bill. So we're really working to solve those problems. And now that's why we're really tackling the opaqueness of the hospital industry and its consolidation and how it's really driving costs up across the state. And I'd say, Jeff, this is not just happening in Texas. This is happening all over the country. And state legislatures, whether it's Washington State, Oregon, Massachusetts, North Carolina, or here even in Texas, are all tackling this issue because we're seeing that it's not localized to one place, but this is a broad national issue.
Yeah. What are there other challenges? What are some of the other challenges that you're finding in Texas that the Texans are facing when it comes to healthcare?
Well, first off, we have a doctor shortage. So we have 254 counties in the great state of Texas. And of those 254 counties, 234 of those counties are identified as a healthcare shortage provider area. So it means that we don't have enough doctors to simply cover the population of those counties. So not only do we have doctor shortage, we have a nursing shortage. We also have an opportunity to pass direct primary care. This is actually increasing access, but driving down the costs of care, where now you can pay basically a monthly Netflix subscription to get the cost or to get primary care that you want with a doctor that is consistent, and you're getting better continuity of care at a price you can afford. It's really taking the insurance company out of the equation and paying cash. We've also been doing some really interesting things about drug importation with drugs from Canada, and really looking at telehealth services, whether that's in telehealth with doctors or telepharmacy. But how do we look at the entire ecosystem of healthcare and really start tackling these unique individualized issues that are really infringing on people's access to care and really increasing the cost of care that they can no longer afford, that puts them into medical debt?
Well, you talked about direct primary care. We actually did an episode on this show about direct primary care. And, you know, there is, it seems to me like in healthcare, there's not one big gigantic solution. But there are many, many things that we can do. And I think collectively it would be a gigantic solution if we could do many of these things. Direct primary care is one of those. And, you know, in a lot of places, it's not legal to do direct primary care. And health insurance companies don't want it to be, because it does cut out health insurance companies. It's basically a direct primary care is where you have a contract with a doctor who you just pay a monthly fee, kind of a concierge type plan, if you will, and you go see them as many times as you want for that same amount of money. That's one example of some of the things that we can do. You also mentioned telehealth. Are there other things besides that? Or maybe you can talk about how those would help impact the health or the cost of health insurance.
Absolutely. Let me dive deeper into direct primary care. It's something that I'm personally convicted about, that my husband and I even use direct primary care. We're based here in Dallas. And as we got married, we wanted to kind of be on the same plan. And I said, you know, we should really look at direct primary care. Jeff, I think you mentioned it was previously kind of called concierge care, which is really unaffordable for many people. You can't pay $5,000 or $10,000 up front to get access to the doctor of your choice. Now those costs have really come down. And so we pay $160 a month to get to be able to see our doctor anytime, same day appointments, and be able to have a one-on-one relationship with our doctor. When I was on a different plan, just using normal insurance, I saw my doctor once a year for 15 minutes when I went through my annual checkup. When I was really sick and needed to see the doctor, I could only get in to see his assistant, and she was lovely, but she was the only one that I could see, because he had, you know, 300 patients, or I think on scale he had to get through at least 60 plus patients a day, 300 a week. Now through direct primary care, my personal doctor, now he only has 400 patients total. He doesn't have to go hit a quota. And why that's important is that I can have, when I have my meeting with my doctor, It's an hour long. We go through all of the test results. We have a personal relationship, and just the difference in the costs, just to put a little bow on this for you, is that when I went to get blood work done about a year ago, I was like, well, how much would this cost if I just paid, you know, through insurance? He said, $181. I said, okay, well, I'm now with you, so what is it going to cost me as I check out? He goes, $4. $4. The delta between what insurance is you're paying for insurance versus just paying direct cash is really tremendous, and it's giving huge cost savings.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and what a great example of that. Now, there would be people, and I'll give you the opportunity to debunk this. There would be some people who say, well, yeah, but what happens when you get really sick and, you know, it's more than your doctor can handle? How do you get referrals, all that kind of stuff? Tell folks how it works in your case.
How it works in my case, when I get really sick, because I have been recently, my doctor, he personally calls and makes an appointment with the referral with the doctor. I can go the next day. I don't have to wait 3 weeks to go see the specialist that I need. They have a network of preferred providers that understand how the system is working, understand how that they want to change the system and provide better quality of service by getting the people that are sick the access that they need in a timely fashion. So all I can say is that it works, that those referrals are very quick. The doctor talks directly to the doctor, not the doctor talking to another scheduler down the way. It's just a streamlined process. And I think one of the things that I really like the most about direct primary care that we're seeing, at least in Texas, is down in South Texas. It's on the news a lot right now with all the border crisis. But what we're seeing is that there's direct primary care in these these markets. Harlingen, McAllen, Laredo, the Rio Grande Valley is what it's called. And for $60 a month, the same type of people or anyone could get the same type of care. So this is a provider. It's called Frontier Direct Primary Care. I happen to know them. And they said, we have a guy with a private plane who's a patient, and we also have patients that are day workers. They both pay the same $60. Get the best service that we can provide. And it's no longer about the haves or have nots. It's about meeting people where they're at, getting them the highest quality of service at the highest quality of care at a reasonable price that they can afford. And so we're seeing that not even in big cities like Dallas, we're seeing in small markets and in markets where there's a ton of traffic and a lot of health concerns that this model is also working incredibly well.
Yeah. And these are innovations in the way that we deliver healthcare that make a difference. You also mentioned telehealth, which, you know, many states, particularly pre-COVID, didn't allow. And of course, COVID made that made us realize how unprepared we were for delivery of healthcare in many cases. And so it opened it up. I assume what's the laws in Texas on telehealth? Do you still need to do some have some work to do there, or is it pretty good?
We're pretty good. What we are working on is to figure out how we can get telehealth providers from outside the state lines. So, you know, our friends in Louisiana or Oklahoma, those practitioners can provide services to Texans that need it. But by and large, telehealth is largely adopted here in the state. I have a good friend that's a member of Congress, and he said, Jen, I had a rash on my forearm, and so I took a picture of it, sent it to my doctor. He sent me back the ointment that I needed. That's telehealth in real time, and that's a variation of telehealth, as we know. But being able to get the immediacy of service when you need it is really what our Texas legislature is focused on. And I got to give our state legislature a lot of credit for paying attention to this. Because Texas is known as having the highest number of uninsured citizens. And so our goal is to change the conversation around, well, you don't necessarily need insurance if you can just pay cash through a direct primary care model, get the services you need at a faster time and a lower rate. You know, you don't necessarily need insurance for everything. And I think our state legislature is really adopting this mantra of innovation. And how do we look in expanding our horizons on healthcare and providing better service, better care at a cost people can afford without just expanding government-run healthcare? So I want to commend our state reps and our leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. That innovation, that's what drives it all, is changing the model and changing what we're doing and allowing for competition. You talked about having a shortage of doctors. Gosh, if you can use telehealth in a good way, that'll help. But it'll also help if you can allow doctors from other states to be able to do that in Texas with patients in Texas. That's all innovation. There's this bill, I guess, Site-Based Invoicing and Transparency Enhancement Act, or SITE. What would that bill do?
Yeah, it's kind of a gobbledygook name, but what the SITE Act would do is create consistent pricing from within the hospital consolidation space. So let me take a step back. What we're seeing nationally is that hospitals are buying up smaller practices, typically in suburban or rural communities. They're buying these private doctors' practices and putting their names on the front door and changing the administrative processes behind the doors. But the services are still the same. And what's been interesting is we've been peeling back the onion here. This is not just happening in Texas, but in Texas specifically, what these hospitals are doing when they buy these community-based hospital outpatient centers or clinics, what they're doing is increasing the prices of the services that haven't changed. They're increasing the prices 14 to 58%, as much as 58%. So if I went in for a cold week one, and it was just my private doctor in his small little rural practice, he might charge me $30. Let's just say I'm making up whole numbers. But then the next week he sells to a big hospital conglomerate. They jack up the prices 25%. Okay, well, 25% of $30 isn't that much. But over time, that adds up. And if it's just a cold, that's a small dollar value. But if it's a big procedure, that could be thousands of extra dollars the patients are paying for without getting anything different. And so what the Site-Based Invoicing and Transparency Enhancement Act is saying that hospitals can't charge different prices for the same services being rendered if they've bought a different outpatient clinic. And so what we're really trying to do is create some consistency and some transparency around the pricing that's happening to help drive costs down, but also say, hospitals, you can't be monopolistic. You can't just work to consolidate this massive ecosystem. You need to make sure that communities and rural areas aren't hit first and worst by these hospitals coming in and either closing down a practice or charging more for patients in rural communities to receive care. We're trying to say there needs to be a level of accountability and consistency in pricing.
Now, what about the Facilitating Accountability and Reimbursement Act? It's called FAIR. And again, they always make these bill titles so that they have a nice sounding acronym, which I love. But what would that piece of legislation do?
It's simply the companion bill in the House. So it's the similar bill in the House to the Senate's bill. The Senate says it's the SITE Act. The House has the FAIR Act. And it would really do the same thing. It would make sure that when hospitals are trying to get reimbursements from Medicare or Medicaid, that they're not being charged different prices in different communities if they're owned under the same hospital conglomerate.
Gotcha. Now, one other aspect we haven't talked about on this, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, but love to hear where Texas is on certificate of need, but also just in general certificate of need and how you know, in states where that still exists should be repealed.
Yeah, the fact that certificates of need are still in existence is crazy to me, that a hospital has to justify its need to go serve a community, or a clinic has to do that. That seems, I have a choice word in my mind, but I shouldn't say it on the podcast.
Okay.
But, you know, what we're seeing is that now people are getting sicker, they're staying sicker longer, and communities are really struggling with access to care. So to being, for a community having to prove that there needs to be a hospital or clinic in that community, a certificate of need to exist, just is ridiculous. We repealed that back in the 1980s here in Texas. And so that is one of the things that our legislature a long time ago got really right. But that's something that in the global landscape, we need competition. Hospitals, they hate the CITE Act. They hate certificates of need because it's increasing competition. And when you're increasing competition, you're driving down their margins. So I guess I was joking with my husband and a few friends. I said, I think the hospital lobbyists and all of the hospital conglomerates are probably going to have like a my face printed out with like an X on their on their bulletin boards to take out, because I just think that hospitals have gotten away with way too much, taking advantage of patients. And we need to, as patients, reclaim our power and reel them back in. They shouldn't be the ones controlling our care. It should be the patients in the driver's seat.
Absolutely. You talked about certificate of need and that you repealed it decades ago in Texas. How, one of the arguments that people make, and again, certificate of need is basically a government permission slip. So if a hospital wants to come, well, if an MRI facility wants to open a facility in a city that has certificate of need, they have to go to the government, fill out a form, get approval from the government that says, okay, you can open this facility. So it's ultimately a government permission slip. But in Texas, you haven't had that. One of the, for many, many decades, one of the arguments that other states make is in rural areas, this would be devastating because, you know, we it would close our rural hospitals. Have you seen that in Texas? Has that been the case in Texas?
No. No, and they're making the same argument, by the way, Jeff, right, on the CITE Act, that, oh my gosh, if we have to, we need to charge more in rural America than we do in urban America because the cost of giving care is just more expensive. Like, that's not true. And no, it's not causing rural America to have, you know, to lose out on these facilities. If anything, driving more innovation like direct primary care or telehealth services or having more price accountability and transparency is going to cause more clinics, more outpatient areas to start up because there's going to be a lower barrier to entry. And that's what we're seeing in Texas.
Now, I think healthcare is complicated and people view it as complicated because there are a lot of laws that need to be changed at the state level, but then there's also a lot of laws that need to be changed at the federal level. And in a lot of other issues, that's not the case. It's either kind of federal or it's state. So that is an interesting dynamic in healthcare. There's lots that the federal government can do, but there's also lots that states can do as well. Do you agree with that?
I sure do.
Yeah. So you also have a Congressman Sessions from Texas who is doing a lot of good work at the federal level. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. It seems like Texas is kind of, I'll throw this out there because, you know, Texans love to talk about Texas. You're leading the Congress in a lot of ways with some of the innovative stuff that you're doing at the federal level through Congressman Sessions.
Well, Congressman Sessions is wonderful. He's a personal friend, and to his credit, he has served the community in Dallas, Texas, for many years, and now he's the congressman in kind of a, I would say, suburban community in Waco, Texas. And so he's seen two different kinds of environments. And as a close friend to both AFP and myself, we've been working with him because he sees the needs that people are having based on healthcare. And he has a bill and that the Healthcare Fairness for All Act that would allow for basically tax credit of about $12,000 for a family of four to receive tax credit or to receive credits back on their health care. And he's really got started in this issue because he has a special needs son whose health care is expensive. And for him, it's personal. And he's not the only person in America with a child with a special need that is special needs. But the cost of the care for his son that special needs versus the cost of the care for his son that was an Eagle Scout, so two sons, they're very different. And he was like, you know, when we spoke to him, I said, Congressman, we have a crazy idea about healthcare. We're calling it the personal option, and it's really this really provocative concept that we should increase the access to care, we should lower the cost of care, enforce price transparency, ensure price transparency is there, and ensure that Medicare and Medicaid safety nets are there for those who actually need it. Now, does that sound provocative to you, Jeff?
Not really, no.
Exactly. These are normal concepts.
Yeah.
And the reality is that that's where every American is. But the system, the healthcare system, is so complex, so complicated, and so designed to protect itself that any level of innovation, any level of challenge is met with a mountain of challenge from different lobbying groups and from different members. And he said, you know what? We have to change the conversation and the incentive structure around healthcare. If it's costing a family of four to pay upwards of $20,000 on their healthcare deductible to just get care, this is completely wrong. If we can just begin to give tax credits that are going to allow half of that cost to be credited back to a family, let's start there. And then let's work to expand that, because every family should be able to get access to care that they need at a cost they can afford.
Yeah. Well, and I think as you're talking about some of the barriers that exist in the healthcare system that we currently have, it does remind me of the education system, right? The system has been there to protect itself over decades. And we're finally breaking that down. You're working on that very diligently as well in Texas, but it is falling. Those systems that have been in place to protect the system in education are falling in state after state in America. But we're starting to see that in healthcare as well, that we need to focus on patients rather than systems.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's really interesting is that the SITE Act specifically is creating some odd bedfellows, whether it's Americans for Prosperity or the Progressive Policy Institute, or, you know, we're both working on passing this bill. You know, you typically don't see that AFP works with, you know, the Progressive Policy Institute and a whole bunch of others, but it's a coalition of the willing that says, we have to be willing to stand up for the patients now because the cost of care is too much. And so what we believe here in Texas is that if we can help put enough downward pressure on either our state elected officials to pass some of these bills or our congressional members, then if we can do it in Texas with 30 million citizens, we can waterfall this out and export it out to any other state. Because Texas is so big, sometimes we can use our size to our advantage from a policy perspective and really use this to create better care and better costs for all Americans, not just Texans. So that's what we're looking to do. And it's been kind of fun to see this, like I said, odd coalition of bedfellows, but it just proves that with such a diverse coalition of every single viewpoint in the political spectrum, that if we all believe the same thing, then it probably has to be true, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
that it's worth right. fighting for.
That's great. Well, if listeners or our viewers want to get involved, how can they learn more and what can they do to get involved?
Well, first off, I think you need to reach out to your member of Congress and say, please pass the FAIR Act. That's the Facilitating Accountability and Reimbursements Act. Again, that's some gobbledygook. Just say pass the FAIR Act. And for your members of Senate, you can email them directly and say, please pass the CITE Act. That's Site-Based Invoicing and Transparency Enhancement. More gobbledygook, CITE Act. Reach out to your members. But also, Americans for Prosperity has 50 state chapters. Reach out to your local state chapter because they're probably already engaging on this policy. And I would say, here in Texas, visit our website, AmericansForProsperity.org, or visit us on Twitter at TexasAFP, or follow me at GCollinsTX. I talk about this a lot and how communities are really struggling and with these unfair pricing monopolies. And so follow me and we can get you involved. And then the last thing I would say is if you're interested in more of the healthcare conversation, how to take part of it and how to be part of the solution, not just be shouting into the echo chamber of, oh my gosh, this is so frustrating. The solutions can be found on our website, www.personaloption.com. Please go there. Please get engaged and please lend your voice. You know, what we forget, Jeff, is that Americans' personal unique experiences and their stories are what are the catalysts to create change. And when we can use our platform to give enough people a microphone to share their story and their testimony, we will change this policy and we will break the watershed. We will break the logjam and create better opportunities for all Americans.
Yeah, very well said, Genevieve. I appreciate it. And people do need to get involved. Thanks for all the great work you're doing in Texas and on this issue of healthcare. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, we've talked a lot about healthcare on this podcast. And as I mentioned, I do think the time is now. The time has certainly been a long time coming for us to have reform in healthcare. But as has happened in education and is happening in education around America and in the states, it's transformational change, right? Where we're not focusing on the system, we're not focusing on insurance companies or providers, but we're focusing on patients, just like we focus on students in an education system instead of systems, teachers, and administrators. That's how we're going to change and revolutionize healthcare and make it better for the American people. Thanks for joining us. Remember, liberty and freedom are easily taken for granted. Don't take them for granted. Go out and defend liberty and freedom. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.